Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's third quarter 2016 earnings call. Armando Tamez, Nemak's CEO, and Alberto Sada, CFO, and Maximilian Zimmermann, Investor Relations, are here this morning to discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you may have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's Investor Relations website. I would now like to turn the call over to Maximilian Zimmermann. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good morning and welcome, everyone. We very much appreciate your participation. Armando Tamez, our CEO, will lead off today's call by providing an overview of our business and financial highlights. Alberto Sada, our CFO, will then discuss key industry trends and our third quarter financial results in more detail. Afterwards, we will open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on those forward-looking statements. Nemak undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Armando Tamez.
Thank you, Max. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's third quarter 2016 results conference call. I would like to start off with an update on our planned acquisition of Chebar. A supplier of complex aluminum automotive castings based in Turkey, since signing an agreement to acquire the company this past August, we have been focused on securing the required regulatory approvals and arranging the closing of the transaction. Today, I am pleased to share that the process is moving along on a schedule, and we expect to close before the end of this month. We are confident that the acquisition will create value and advance our growth plans, particularly in Europe, where we expect it will bring three main benefits to our existing footprint and our overall competitive position in the region. First, we're operating near capacity in Europe and it gives us access to more capacity, thereby enabling us to meet projected increases in demand from our customers. Second, it makes our cost structure in Europe more competitive. Third, integrating Chebar's resources and know-how into our system will serve to further reinforce our relationship with premium automakers in the region. Turning to the quarter, we saw EBITDA down 6%, mainly due to the one-off impact of metal price lag. As you may recall, falling aluminum prices in the third quarter of last year created a tailwind for us in the form of a positive metal price lag, making for a tough comparable. Additionally, rising aluminum prices this quarter translated into negative metal price lag, affecting our profitability. Volumes also have an impact in the quarter, but to a lesser extent. At lower volumes in North America, which were mainly due to the effects stemming from FCA's decision to scale down its Chrysler 200 and Dodge Dart platforms, more than offset higher volumes in Europe and rest of world by a narrow margin. I want to emphasize that our EBITDA result for the quarter was in line with our annual guidance. We have already built into our forecast for the year the assumption that the benefit we received from positive metal price lag last year will not recur this year. Meanwhile, revenues decreased 3%, mainly due to lower year-over-year aluminum prices. Please keep in mind that the pass-through agreements we have with our customers protect our bottom line from the effects of changes in aluminum prices, excluding any temporary effects of metal price lag. Moving on to CapEx. As we have mentioned in previous conference calls, one of our main focuses over the past few years has been to execute new capital investments to keep up with growing industry demand and to further enhance our R&D and manufacturing footprint. I want to start with Europe, where our priorities have been to continue with capacity expansions as well as the ramp-up of our structural component business. During the quarter, we continued to invest in further developing our technological capabilities at our product development center in Poland, where we are providing support for the launches of all the structural component programs currently in our pipeline. In addition, we advanced with the construction of a new plant in Slovakia, where we will be producing the structural components beginning in the second half of next year. I also want to touch on Mexico, where the main highlights have been the construction of a new machining center and a new high-pressure die casting plant. And I am pleased to share that we began operating the machining center just this past September, a milestone in our efforts to provide more value-added services to our customers. And we remain on track to inaugurate the high-pressure die casting plant before the end of this year. With automakers increasingly shifting production to Mexico from all around the world, these investments will put us in an even better position to capitalize on future industry growth. Kia Motors and Audi are both good examples of how Nemak can benefit from this trend. Kia opened a new engine and vehicle assembly plant in Monterrey just this past September, and we are currently ramping up several new programs to supply them with cylinder heads. Also, in September, Audi launched a new vehicle assembly plant in Puebla, which we will be supplying with structural components out of our new high-pressure die casting plant starting in the first half of next year. I would now like to move on to our volume performance in terms of our regions. As I mentioned before, we have seen lower volumes in North America so far this year, mainly due to the impact of FCA's decision to scale down their mid-sized sedan lines, not as a result of the industry deceleration. I also want to emphasize that given our global footprint, we see ourselves as well positioned to balance growth across the world's largest and fastest growing automotive markets going forward. In particular, we expect our presence in Europe and Asia, where we see solid fundamentals for continued market growth, to further support volumes and profitability. I would now like to say a few words about the structural components. With most of our backlog of programs to produce structural components scheduled to reach serial production in the next 12 to 18 months, we are highly focused as an organization on continuing to strengthen our capabilities to produce these components. A key example of this effort has been our team based in Munich, Germany, where we are developing an operation dedicated to performing high value-added secondary processes, including heat treatment, straightening, and machining on a structural component for the BMW 7 Series. We have been ramping up these operations in the first half of this year, and it is expected to reach full volume by the end of this year. The know-how we are gaining from this work will be applicable across our structural component business and will position us to further strengthen our relationship with customers. In addition to representing a natural outgrowth for our work to help customers reduce CO2 emissions and improve the fuel efficiency of their vehicles, we see these structural components as a bridge to the growing market for electric vehicles. Now, not only do electric vehicles require structural components made out of aluminum to maximize battery range and efficiency, but there is considerable overlap between the technical capabilities required to produce aluminum structural components and those required for the production of other components used in electric vehicles. In particular, we believe that we are well positioned to compete for new business in complex e-drive applications, battery housings, and e-motor components. Given that across the board, our customers have scheduled unprecedented new investments in technologies and applications for electric vehicles, we are planning accordingly and working harder than ever to capitalize on new business opportunities in this segment. I am pleased to share that these efforts are starting to pay off, as we won an important new contract this quarter to produce 100% of the battery housing for a new hybrid vehicle platform of BMW for the North American market. At the global level, this quarter, we won new contracts to produce cylinder heads, engine blocks, and electric vehicle components worth a total of $200 million in annual revenue, approximately half of which represented incremental business. For the last 9 months, we have won new contracts across our business lines worth a total of $650 million in annual revenues, with half of that total representing incremental business. I would now like to highlight our efforts to develop and leverage technological innovations. I am pleased to share that this past September, we were recognized by BMW as one of its most innovative global suppliers. The automaker cited Nemak's use of proprietary rotocast and sand package technologies to drive weight reduction and efficiency improvements in vehicles. To conclude, I want to share that last week, the rating agency Moody's raised our outlook from stable to positive, citing our strong credit metrics and high profitability, among other factors. Our rating was affirmed at Ba1, which is one notch below investment grade. I will now hand off the call to Alberto Posada, Nemak's CFO.
Thank you, Armando, and good morning, everyone. Let me start by sharing relevant industry data that sheds light on our results. During the third quarter of 2016, the seasonally adjusted annual rate for vehicle sales in the U.S. decreased 1% from a strong third quarter of 2015. Meanwhile, North America vehicle production and Nemak customers' vehicle production were flat. Nemak customers continued benefiting from consumers' preference for large pickups and SUVs. In Europe, vehicle sales SAR in third quarter 2016 was up 2% compared to the third quarter of last year, as higher volumes in Western Europe compensated for lower volumes in Eastern Europe. In contrast, vehicle production in Europe decreased 2% from third quarter 2015, and Nemak's customers' production decreased 3% in the region. The decrease in production was mainly due to the slowdown of some of our customers' platforms, mainly geared to exports. Now let me move on to discuss our results. Volume in the quarter was 12.2 million equivalent units, a 2% decrease from the same quarter of last year, mainly due to the lower volumes experienced in North America, which were partly offset by higher volumes in Europe and the rest of the world. I will now turn on to our financials. Revenues were $1.1 billion, 3% below the same quarter of last year, primarily due to lower aluminum prices combined with lower volumes. Aluminum prices decreased 6% in this period, translating into a negative revenue effect of approximately $19 million. It is important to highlight that, as Armando mentioned, we have a pass-through of aluminum prices in all our contracts with our customers, which protects our bottom line from the effects of any year-over-year changes in aluminum. Gross profit decreased 11% to $171 million. This decrease was driven by negative metal price lag in third quarter of 2016, combined with the positive effect of one-offs, such as positive metal price lag in third quarter of 2015, making this quarter a tough comparable. This quarter, the SG&A line shows a reduction compared to the same period of last year due to a reclassification of certain salary expenses to cost of goods sold. This reclassification has no effect on our results. Now, let me continue down our P&L. Income from operation was $103 million, a 14.9% decrease from the same quarter of 2015, driven by lower gross profit. EBITDA for the period was $182 million, a 6% decrease compared to the third quarter of last year. This decrease was due to the decline in income from operations, which I just described. EBITDA per equivalent unit decreased 5% on the same period to $14.9 per unit. Net income was $59 million, a decrease of 27%, driven by higher income taxes and a lower income from operations, which were partly compensated by lower financing expenses. Please keep in mind that last year we had a positive effect in income taxes due to foreign exchange movements. In terms of our balance sheet, as of the end of September, we had a net debt position of $1.3 billion, $128 million higher than the same time last year. Cash and cash equivalents were $108 million. Now, allow me to give you some details on our regional results. Our volume in North America decreased 5%, mainly due to the production downscale of FCA's mid-size sedan line, combined with the phase-out of an export program whose replacement will be produced by our operations in Europe. Revenues decreased 6%, mainly due to lower aluminum prices, combined with the volume effect previously mentioned. As indicated before, aluminum prices are a pass-through under the contracts we have with our customers. EBITDA in North America decreased 15% compared to third quarter of 2015, mainly driven by lower volumes and negative metal price lag, combined with a tough comparable figure in third quarter of 2015, which included one-offs such as positive metal price lag. Additionally, this quarter we incurred restructuring costs in North America related to the phase-out of the production line at our Alabama plant, whose volume has been relocated to Europe, operations using a different casting technology, and another portion to our Kentucky facility in the U.S. Moving on, we are very pleased with the financial results achieved in Europe. Volume increased 3% due to the ramp-up in production of new engine block contracts, while our customers' production volumes slightly declined. Revenues decreased by 3%, driven by lower aluminum prices, which were partly compensated by higher volumes. EBITDA in Europe increased 14% compared to the same quarter of last year, driven by higher volumes, a positive mix, and efficiencies. In our rest of the world operations, our volumes increased 9%, as higher volumes in Asia more than compensated for lower volumes in South America. Revenues increased 22%, driven by higher volumes and a better mix in Asia. EBITDA increased by $5 million due to improved profitability in Asia, which more than offset lower volumes in South America. I would like to close with two updates related to our stock. On September 26th, we announced that UBS will be our market maker on the Mexican Stock Exchange, which will result in higher liquidity for our stock. And last, we received the good news that NEMA will remain part of Mexico's benchmark stock index, the Índice de Precios y Cotizaciones, for the next annual period, which took effect in September and runs through August 2017. And with that, I would like to open the call for your questions. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will be conducting a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, you may press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star key. Our first question comes from the line of Juan Tavares with Citi. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you. Good morning, everyone. My first question is just to understand your view of the industry growth in North America and in Europe. I know this year so far you've been growing below the industry trend due to these changes at FCA. I'm curious, if you were to adjust out those changes from the plan at FCA, how have you been trending so far this year? And also as we go into next year, how do you see demand growing in the North America and in Europe? And on your customer base, do you think you'll trend in line with that industry growth or a bit different? And also, if I can ask on structural components, could you give us an update on kind of how you how much contracts are signed year to date for this new segment, and how are you seeing the customer appetite in adapting to this new product line? Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Juan. Certainly, nobody in the industry was expecting that FCA would scale down and exit to some extent the mid-size vehicle lines. We were not expecting that. Unfortunately, put us in a difficult situation related to some volume in North America. But in general terms, we're expecting that this year the industry will remain strong. I think we have seen already nice volumes in the range of about 17.5 million units. And also we are seeing that automakers in North America are increasing production. In the past, they were importing a lot of vehicles from other regions, and you have seen already a lot of new capacity being installed in Mexico as well as in the U.S. So for next year, I think it's a little bit too early to tell. So far, based on studies made by industry analysts, they're expecting that the industry will stay at similar levels as this year, but I think we need to watch over the next few months how the economy, especially in the U.S., will develop. Related to your question about the structural components, I think we have already indicated that we have been getting contracts for about $200 million plus in structural components. We are adding also additional revenues on the electric housing for new applications. And I think we are on track, again, to reach the $1 billion that we are thinking that we will be reaching by the end of the decade. Again, we see a lot of appetite from different automakers, not only in Europe, but also in North America. As we speak, we're quoting a lot of new business opportunities, and I think we're confident that we will be getting additional orders in the next few months.
Yeah, okay, and complementing that that response related to Europe, we still see the European market also relatively strong, especially Western Europe, where we're seeing the market continuing with a very positive effect as we have seen this year. So we expect that trend to continue, whereas the Eastern European countries remain relatively flat as we have seen during this year.
Okay, thank you. And can you remind us when do you start selling your first batch of structural components?
Yes, we are at this moment starting sending prototypes to some customers in Europe and also North America, and we're expecting to start normal production by next year. In the summer of next year, we will be starting production of structural components for several platforms.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of David Tamberrino from Goldman Sachs. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning, and thank you for taking our questions. I have a couple of them. Just to kind of dig back in on the structural component side, it's good to see that you're making incremental progress here. My question is really what you think your win rate is within the segment, right, for structural and the EV side combined, or maybe just structural, because I think we've seen another competitor announce that they've, you know, we're going to put in incremental aluminum capacity within the North America market. I'm just kind of wondering, the 200 plus million win rate that you've had so far, is that 50% of the market? Is it 30% of the market? You know, what do you think your at bat rate here is in terms of winning and converting that business opportunity?
Yeah. Well, I think it's for us also difficult to tell exactly what is our hitting ratio. This is a new industry. We are seeing that some customers certainly are moving into different alternatives. It's, again, an attractive industry, and certainly we have competition. But I believe that based on our technical capabilities as well as our cost structure, we will be getting a further market share in the next few months. And I think we have demonstrated with complex castings such as engine blocks and also aluminum cylinder head castings that we have certainly an edge in terms of technology, quality, and cost. And we believe that we will position our company, again, as one of the winners in this industry.
Okay, that's fair, and maybe we can discuss a little bit later. A couple other questions for me. It was nice to see the rest of world, you know, revenue growth really come back in. Can you talk to, you know, the launch of vehicles or launch of programs in China? Because we did see a return to pretty significant growth there within the rest of world volumes.
Yeah, I think that's a very further question, David. One of the things that we have indicated in the past is that in China, basically, for the past few years, the Chinese market was using low-complexity engine or powertrains. Now, since they are moving and they have a priority to reduce CO2 emissions and improve fuel efficiency, as well as Europe and North America, they are moving into more sophisticated powertrains. And this is where we are taking a significant step, gaining additional market share, especially for high complex engine components. And this is where we're starting to see those benefits, not only in terms of volumes, but also in terms of profitabilities. And we are very focused on continuing growing at a very nice pace over the next couple years in that region.
Okay. That's very helpful. And just the last one for me on the metal pricing lag, you know, into the third quarter, obviously a headwind. on the at the current spot prices that we have for aluminum, should we see a similar headwind from the lag effect in the fourth quarter, or should that start to mean revert and it shouldn't be as big of a drag on margins?
Well, David, it depends, obviously, on how the prices develop. I think if they stay relatively at this level and they have been swinging up and down, we should probably see a small effect, but should not be that big as we saw this quarter. But again, it will be subject to how the metal prices develop going forward. There is a lag that we have with the prices with our customers that stands in between a month to 2 months. So it's that's more or less the sensitivity that we have for those phenomenal price fluctuations.
Understood. That's very helpful. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Luis Morando from Santander. Please proceed with your question.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my question, Armando Alberto Max. Good morning. Two questions. The first one is, Armando, if you could give us some color, when we see the declining volumes in North America, how would you describe the quality of the volume that you lost in terms of, first, if it was, let's say, average in terms of sales mix, or it was less profitable than the average? And second, if it's a volume that affects your machining, the quantity of machining you're doing in-house. And the second is related to machining, if there's any material change or, well, evolution from the last quarter to now. I know it's very marginal at most, but I would like to know if there's any improvement. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you, Luis, for the question. The volume that certainly has been affecting us is, again, as I indicated, the reduction on the mid-size vehicle platform of FCA. We are the main producer of FCA, especially for cylinder heads and engine blocks. And the particular platform, unfortunately for us, have a high exposure from our side, because we were producing for them cylinder heads, engine blocks, as well as a bed plate. So it was a combination of three different products on an engine that they are, again, reducing significantly their demand for this year. In spite of that, again, we are seeing increases in other engine platforms as well as transmission housings that partially offset that particular volume. What we are, again, trying to see is if we are able to gain additional market share in North America with other customers and use some of the existing capacity that FCA left open for us.
And related to the machining, we don't see a major effect on the machining, on our in-house machining strategy. That volume doesn't have much an effect. And at the same time, to your question related to machining, I think we're progressing in line with our expectations to continue increasing our in-house capacity of new powertrain platforms. So for this quarter, there has been no material change other than what Armando indicated, the ramp-up and launch of the second machining site in Monterrey.
Yeah. I think it's important also to tell you that we're in negotiations with the customer to see other opportunities. And again, we are foreseeing that we will be compensated with an additional volume, a volume that is coming from a different region. But we are in close communication with that customer to help us offset some of the volume decline that we have suffered over the last few months.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, it is star one to ask a question. Our next question comes from the line of Vanessa Quiroga from Credit Suisse. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you for the call. My question is regarding just a clarification on the metal lag. Is there a reason to have a more pronounced effect of the metal lag in the third quarter of every year, or is it just purely related to the volatility or the size of the movement of prices of aluminum? Thanks.
Yes, Vanessa, thanks for the question. No, absolutely. I think it's related to your second point. There is no correlation between the aluminum price movement and any given quarter of the year. So essentially, depending on how pronounced the move is if you're going to see a more pronounced either positive or negative effect on our results. But at the end, it's totally related to how the aluminum prices move, but has nothing to do with any given quarter.
Okay. A couple of other questions. On the impact from FCA, can you quantify what the effect was on NIMAC volumes, and when do you expect that to normalize?
Well, I think the effect is approximately about between 300 to 400,000 units or equivalent units that we lost due to the decision from FCA to some extent downscale the production of the mid-size sedan vehicle lines. And again, we are in negotiations with the customers. I think we have an excellent relationship with them. And we are, again, negotiating a type of compensation in which most likely we will be taking additional volume from other regions to compensate for that loss over the next few months. And that is a potential contract that we are in the process of closing over the next few weeks that will help us offset a significant portion of the volume that we lost.
That's great to hear. And finally, on the new contracts that you have been awarded, can you update us on the timing to see the contribution from the new business from those contracts? Thanks.
What contract, Vanessa? Because we have several. Again, in the quarter, we are reporting $200 million worth of new contracts. Could you be more specific?
Well, for the $650 million that you've signed year to date.
Okay. Basically, once you sign new contracts with customers in this industry, it takes between 18 to 24 months to start production of these components, and the ramp-up curve normally takes between 1 to 1.5 years to reach full production.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Sumo Mukiri from Mizuho Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thanks. My question is related to the rating actions. Given the positive outlook that you've obtained by Moody's and given the assumptions, I guess, Moody's makes in terms of the next steps for you to get the upgrade in terms of recognizing your revenue, greater revenue diversification, positive free cash flow, and leverage kind of approaching 1.5 times in the next 18 months. Just wondering, have you received similar type feedback from the other agencies, S&P and Fitch, in terms of potential that your rating or outlook could also be revised? And if so, what are some of the main triggers that they're looking for, if you could share that with us? And also, second part of the question is that a strategic goal of the company, given that some of the other subsidiaries of the Alfa Group have an investment-grade rating already, to achieve that in a near future time frame? Thank you.
No, thank you. Yeah, the short answer is that we have received the same type of grade from two rating agencies, Standard & Poor's, that in the summer increased also our outlook from stable to positive, and we are also one notch below investment grade. And last week, as it was already informed, Moody's did the same. They had a review in their credit committee, and I think they see a lot of positive trends in the company. They see better solid financial performance as well as our strategic position. And I think they are confident that if we continue, again, as you indicated, generating free cash flow, improving, again, our leverage ratio to levels at about 1.5 or below, and we could sustain that for a reasonable period of time, I think they told us already that they will review again, and most likely if we could maintain those improve our rating to potentially investment grade. And yes, as a management team, we have indicated clearly that this is an aspiration for the company, and we are doing our best effort basically to improve our financials or operational performance to achieve this, again, grade that I think will help us at the end improve how the debt or the cost of debt for the company, as well as other benefits that we will be getting by becoming an investment grade company.
Great. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Augusto Enciki with HSBC. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Just a quick question, kind of very specific on the balance sheet. I noticed that over the last few quarters, the day sales outstanding has kind of creeped up to the low 60s now from used to be in the 50s. Is this kind of where you guys are comfortable? Is there any issue with the receivables, or is this kind of the new level for you guys? Thank you.
I'm sorry, I couldn't follow you the numbers. You were saying about the sales receivables. Can you repeat your question, please, Augusto?
Yeah. The day sales outstanding for the receivables line, how it's increased significantly over the last year. I was wondering if this is a new mm-hmm. level, or if this is something that you guys want to bring back down or want to have come back down to previous levels.
Yeah, no, you're comparing this with December of last year, right?
Yeah, or even third quarter of last year. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I think this is obviously goes up and down depending on the level of sales that we have on each particular quarter. When you do the comparison with December, it is particularly different because, as you know, the cycle of the industry has an effect where volumes go lower on the December and July and August when the customers have these scheduled shutdowns. So that takes your receivables to very low levels. Normally, the receivables day should be around, depending on the given month, should be between the 25-30 day sales, depending on the level of activity that we have. But I think it will be tough comparable when we do it with December. It will be better to do it with the same quarter of last year. But at the same time, we do have some, let's say, ups and downs, depending on the level of activity we have in one given month.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Our next question is a follow-up question from the line of Juan Tavares with Citi. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you. Yes, just want to try to follow up on, I guess, getting an understanding of what your margins could have been if you didn't have this metal lag. And I know you also mentioned in your earlier remarks about some restructuring costs in North America. Could you help us quantify that in terms of, you know, how much was this restructuring cost and, you know, what margins could have been without or excluding the metal lag?
Yeah, well, yeah, the metal lag one has both things. I think, as we described, we had positive tailwind last year, and we have a little bit negative tailwind this year. So we'll have to take away both of those effects to kind of normalize what would be our margins. I think if you see our EBITDA per unit for the quarter was around $14.8 per piece, and that's slightly lower than what we have for our yearly guidance. I think the margins will gradually improve as we compensate with the fourth quarter results to come up with the year-end expectations around $14.9 to $15 per piece. And I think that will be, let's say, an average absolute that we should account for in terms of EBITDA per piece margin.
And related to the restructuring?
On the restructuring side, that was a small effect that happened in North America. As I indicated, we were shutting down one production line that we are moving on to Europe, and we had to expense a small portion of the restructuring funds. That accounted for about $2 million that we expense in the third quarter for a reduction of headcount. Again, that's a line that we shut it down, and that's the production that we moved to Europe with a different production process.
Okay, thank you very much. Very helpful.
Our next question comes from the line of Andres Alia from GBM. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, thank you very much for taking my question. My question is regarding the electric housing applications business line. Is this included in the structural components guidance for the next decade? And the other question is, what are the type of margin for this type of business? Is it similar to structural components?
I think it's a good question, Andres. The new business that we got in North America is the third business that we get for electrical applications. We have battery housings in Europe, as well as battery trays, and this one that is going to be a very complex and sophisticated housing for the BMW platform for North America. And we are, for the time being, including those, again, in the structural component side, are similar products, as I indicated during my comments. The technology that we are using is similar, so we are, again, for the time being, putting them, again, together since we are using the same technology. And we see a very high potential, again, in both segments, on the structural side plus the electrical housings for new electric vehicles.
Thank you very much.
There are no further questions in queue. I'd like to hand the call back over to Max Zimmerman for closing comments.
Thank you, operator. I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. Please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's teleconference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and have a wonderful day.